on Current State. We are glad you're aboard for Friday, October 31st. The end of the month is obviously here. Many of us in the media put Michigan's midterm election front and center during October. In 4 days, voters will finally decide who will be governor, lieutenant governor, attorney general, secretary of state, as well as who will succeed Michigan's Carl Levin in the U.S. Senate, and dozens of elected representatives at the state capitol. To review and update where we stand today, Current State's Month in Review panel, Tim Skubick covers the capitol for, among others, WKAR-TV's Off the Record. Welcome back, sir.
Marky, good to see you, man.
Kathleen Gray is back representing Gannett Newspapers of Michigan. Kathy.
Hi, Mark.
And Kyle Malin of MERS is here as well. Kyle, thanks for joining us.
It's my pleasure. If I knew that there'd been music here, I'd have been here even sooner.
You're not the first person to say that, as it turns out, interestingly.
They might be more interesting than we are.
Only 4 more days before we're done talking about the election.
Thank goodness.
What has it been like covering the governor and Mark Schauer real recently? What's the vibe inside these campaigns 4 days before the vote?
Well, it's hard to read people's minds, but I would assume the Schauer people are geeked. I mean, 6 months ago, if the 3-4 of us have had this conversation, we said the governor wins probably by 8 points, 6 points, something like that. Well, we got a horse race. It's a toss-up. It's TC, too close to call.
Okay. Kyle?
Well, yeah, I would agree. And I guess I thought that this was going to be probably a 5-point advantage for the governor going in. But this last poll by Epic MRA showing this essentially a horse race is, I think, kind of turned this into a new perspective here. Democrats got to be very energized, not only a Schauer within striking distance, but their U.S. Senate candidates got this one in the bag.
Kathy, according to your paper's poll published yesterday, which is the poll that Kyle just referred to, Rick Snyder has led more often than not, but the lead has shrunk several times and now appears to be one of those times.
Absolutely. It's down to a 45-43 race. And when you put in undecided voters and their partisan preferences, it breaks down to a 46-46 race. So it's coming down to the wire.
Okay. Clarify for our listeners the role absentee ballots are having. Kathy, you and your Free Press colleague Paul Egan wrote that absentee ballots may decide the outcome. What impact could absentee ballots have here?
Well, it could increase turnout. And when you have increased turnouts, that generally benefits the Democrats. Think about 2010. Only 3.2 million people came out and vote, and Republicans ran the table. In 2006, 3.8 million people came out, and Democrats had a really good year. So if they can get turnout up closer to that 3.8 million things, and Democrats are working very hard to make sure that they have as many absentee ballots coming in mm-hmm. as they're sending out, and it appears that is happening.
Is there consensus on who this benefits, growing use of absentee ballots?
The Democrats have been more vocal about their AV work. Bobby Shostak says we have parity with the – now, he may be whistling through the graveyard, but let me just throw this on the table for discussion, and if I'm wrong, we'll destroy this tape, okay? I think we could have such a close election that it may come down to a recount of absentee ballots and, dare I say, it could be a couple of days before we know who the governor is. Is that too far-fetched?
Well, my understanding is that as far as recounting absentee ballots, that's not necessarily an option on the table. When I spoke with Mark Grebner from Practical Political Consultants on this, he said if you do recounts, the recounts are going to be on the votes that are cast on election day, not necessarily the votes that are cast absentee. I'm curious what happens if it gets close, what happens with – I mean, let's go back to 1990. All right, when John Engler won by only a few thousand votes, and a third-party candidate on the ballot, this William Roundtree, actually got more votes than the margin between Engler and Jim Blanchard. So I'm a little curious to see what happens. If it gets under 50% for both candidates, what happens with the third-party candidates?
Well, I know that if I take Mr. Grubner at his word, but I know the Democrats are concerned about the AV vote being recounted. In fact, Mr. Johnson has had 3 attorneys working on that very thing to say, if they dive into the absentee votes, can we protect those?
So and that's what I think. Grebner's working with Lon on that. So I think that may be where he's getting our information and why the Democrats are concerned.
Yeah, the bad news is we're all going to be up late election night.
That part, yeah, well, that's I think we can agree on that.
And, you know, it's pretty amazing because don't you think 2 weeks ago all of us were thinking, oh, we're going to be done by 10 o'clock.
I have to be honest with you. I've never felt that with this thing being this close. Okay, and the question is, why is it so close? Why is not this incumbent governor walking away with this thing? And I think part of the reason is he now has a record, and I think he was also asleep during the summer.
I would agree with that. Well, I think he has. He didn't have an opportunity, or he had the opportunity to find Mark Schauer early in this race and really put him out for a good extended period of time, and he didn't. He's just not a political savvy individual who goes for the throat. It's all about relentless positive action. If you like what I've done, you're going to like what I'm going to do again.
Let's talk about the messaging here, though. The Snyder camp has regularly characterized a Schauer administration as a return to the lost decade. That is the main message here. They've tried to link him to the struggles faced by Governor Granholm. Are you suggesting that messaging hasn't worked?
I think it's a powerful message. There are a lot of people who were concerned. I mean, look at 2010. Democrats stayed home. They weren't happy about what had happened in the last 4 years, and they just didn't want to go out there. They didn't have a credible option at that point, so they stayed home.
The message worked with the base, but he already had the base. Okay, mm-hmm. If you're an independent thinker, are you going to say, you know, I cannot possibly vote for Mark Schauer because he was the Democratic floor leader for Governor Jennifer Granholm, and we sat through 10 years of bad. I don't think for, quote, intelligent voters, that sways them.
Well, and I don't know if they really put the money behind that, though, early. You know, and I'm not disagreeing with you here, but they didn't have ads that said that back in April and May when we could have turned this into a double digit point lead for Snyder.
There was hardly a shortage of negative coverage of this administration, and some of that was going on when the margins between the two were a lot wider. Aramark, the administration's missteps on the charter school discussion, Brian Kelly's trips to Harvard. I guess the question becomes, how would you interpret a Snyder win given all of those? What does that say?
I don't know if those mini scandals, if you want to call them that, are going to add up to what makes it or breaks it for Governor Snyder. I think what's going to make it or break it for him is the messaging on the pension tax and on the education cuts, however you want to interpret the education cut message. The seniors are reliable voters. And they are the ones who are upset about this pension tax, whether they're paying it or not.
We had Bobby Shostak on the show this week, and he had a line that sort of, if you weren't listening, went by. He sort of said that the governor was not aggressive enough. And if you think about it, during that summertime, the Democratic Governors Association defined Rick Snyder. Mm-hmm. Well, the Snyder camp was basically silent. And the governor woke up after Labor Day with people pounding on him, governor, get in this game. Do something, for heaven's sakes. And then you heard the flat-out lie, hogwash line, which is about as tough as it gets for this governor. And that was his beefy response to the Schauer charge about education. So if at the end of the day Mr. Snyder loses that, maybe it's that sleepy summer that may have cost him the election. I'm not predicting that, but it could be something they'll look at.
You know, and I also think the governor's had a hard time trying to define this quote-unquote comeback, if that's what you want to call it. Things are better in 14 than they were in 2010 as far as the economy goes, but he had trouble, I think, finding this message of road to recovery. That's what he finally settled on. But initially he said, we're on the comeback, I'm the comeback kid, and that just didn't wash with voters at all.
Well, and then he changed it to, some of you may not have felt it yet.
But you will soon.
But yeah, stick with me.
Yeah, right? And that didn't go.
Right. And, you know, if you haven't felt it yet, it's like, yeah, I haven't felt it. What's up with that?
Well, and what's with all the town hall meetings? Can you imagine all the energy that the campaign put into booking these 10 appearances around the state with a favorable audience, didn't generate any news, which was not his objective, but did that help at all?
Well, you know, I don't know if they were all preaching to the choir, though. I thought the whole point was to bring in undecided voters. I mean,
but
they have an opportunity.
Well, they weren't.
Come on. Well, no, but I mean, why else would you do it, though?
Well, first of all, he likes likes it.
Well, he does like it, but I mean, rallying the base or the people already going to vote for you doesn't do anything. It would seem like you'd want to bring in the independent voters.
Let's turn to turnout here. A reminder, it's Current State's Month in Review, Special Election Edition with Tim Skubik, Kathy Gray, and Kyle Malin. Turnout is huge here, maybe more for the Democrats with what went down four years ago, Kathy, and it cost them. How are the parties, how are the top campaigns approaching the issue of turnout?
Well, all hands on deck. There's lots of new technology out there that allows people to connect with each other much easier. And there's still the traditional things going on, going and knocking on doors and sending out mailers and those types of things. But these new technologies are being downloaded into people's phones.
You apply for an absentee ballot, and both the parties know about that, correct?
Right, right.
And there's some kind of outreach that happens in the aftermath.
I'm curious about these absentee voters, though. How many of these people are voting absentee? We're going to vote anyway on November 4. I mean, that's
Johnson
the question.
Was asked
great
about
question.
That.
Yeah.
And he said he thinks he's finding new people. And I have a researcher in the background says, yes, a lot of these are new people. And the bad news for the governor, a lot of them are women and seniors, and which is a potential problem for him.
But, I got one of those absentee ballot applications in the mail, and I've never voted absentee in my life. I always vote at the polls.
You're not old enough, my dear.
Yeah. I was going to say she's too young for that.
Absolutely. Why? What are you getting? You're only about 24, aren't you?
Yeah, I wish.
You've all seen your share of elections in this state after a recount. Let's assume a recount. Who do you expect to win?
Well, if you get into a recount scenario, it's almost a coin toss. But I will say that they've gotten the technology down so well on the voting that it's going to be really hard for somebody to win a recount. If they lost on Election Day, unless we're talking, 100, 200, 300 votes, I just have a hard time believing that a recount's going to change the elections much.
Certainly adds some drama.
No kidding.
I want to get back to your turnout question, though, because I think that's a good question. I think the magic number here is 3.5 million. In 2010, when the Republicans swept everything, they had 3.2 million turnout, which is very low, considering in 2006 we were closer to like 3.8. So I'm going to say that the closer you get to 4 million voters, the better it is for Democrats. And the closer you get to 3 million, the better it is for Republicans. I think that should be the watermark.
Let me also jump in on Mr. Schauer's problem. He has not told us specifically what he would do if he's elected. He sort of has said, elect me and I'll tell you what I'm going to do, which is what Mr. Snyder did, which what Dick DeVos did. I understand why politicians don't want to tell you what they're going to do because it could cost them votes. But in all the editorial endorsements for whatever they mean, and they do mean something, but I don't think they turn the election, that has been a major point, has it not?
Oh, absolutely. I was not in on the Detroit Free Press editorial negotiations on who they were going to endorse, but I was there for the interview of both candidates. And that was the big defining factor was Mark Schauer just wasn't offering any specifics. And he was talking about, putting lots of money back into schools, repealing the pension tax. That's a lot of money.
A middle-class tax cut.
And,
Mr. Schauer, how will you pay for it,
sir?
Yeah. And also another defining moment was Snyder's role in the bankruptcy in Detroit and what it's doing for Detroit. And, I think that love him or hate him, that was a sure sign of some political courage of him to do that. And
No question about that. In fact, the Steve Mitchell poll this week had him at 20% of the vote in Detroit, which is about twice what it normally – now, that's a huge number. Now, whether that holds up or not –
it's a Republican poll, too.
Mr. Mitchell would disagree with you, but you can argue that out with him, I'm not his defender. But with bringing the president in – could he get up there and say, hey, all you 20% of the people are going to vote for Mr. Snyder? Here's the record, guys. Don't do it.
The polls suggest, let's move on a little bit. There's lots of other things to talk about here. The polls suggest one of the most lopsided results may be for Secretary of State and U.S. Senate. What's happening inside the state GOP regarding the Peters Land contest and this likely Peters victory?
Oh, they got to be throwing their hands up in despair. I mean, to see Terry Land just let this race go to pots has got to be extremely frustrating. And it could have an impact, a serious impact down ballot in the sense that the base, if there was a race they were excited about, it was U.S. Senate and the possibility of Michigan playing a part in the Republicans taking over the U.S. Senate. That's not a possibility anymore, and it was. And it really should be if you look at what's going on in other states. There's no reason why this race couldn't be competitive, but this has been a horrid campaign from top to bottom. They've let opportunities go by. They have not prepared Terry Land. Terry Land hasn't prepared herself to talk about issues, to engage voters, to talk to the media. And that's just gotten right through the voters, and they don't trust her.
How often is there a Senate opening in the state of Michigan, at least in recent history? This just doesn't happen that often.
It was such a missed opportunity. And there were lots of efforts to try to get a better known, better prepared candidate into the race. And, you know, the Mike Rogers, the Dave Camp, the Candace Miller, they tried to get into the race, and it just didn't happen.
You got to figure the Snyder people are concerned about the Terry Lynn Land phenomenon vis-a-vis Gary Peters dragging a bunch of Democrats to the polls. Now, they are saying they're ticket splitters. They may vote for Peters, but then they're going to come over and, you know, to save their guilt, they'll vote for the governor. I don't know. That's one of the factors we're going to look at on election night.
Did Bobby Shostak say anything more? We'll remind everybody, Shostak is the chairman of the state GOP. Did Bobby Shostak go into this any deeper with you?
He was asked, is the governor in trouble? He says, no, he's not. What about the U.S. Senate candidate? Pause. Pause. It's a challenge and will be a dogfight to the end.
Yeah, I think that's a good assessment. He should be worried about the governor, and I'm sure that they're all hands on deck as far as trying to drive their people to the polls.
Kathy Gray of Gannett, Michigan, Tim Skubick of Michigan Public Radio Network and WKAR-TV, Kyle Malin of MERS on our Month in Review election edition. Kathy, you mentioned the Free Press endorsement of Governor Snyder a few minutes ago. Some number of your readers were surprised when they read of that endorsement. We know you're a reporter, not an editorial writer, but talk to us about that.
Surprised and very, very angry. Lots and lots of very distressed emails, calls, letters about that endorsement. The Free Press obviously is looked at as the more liberal paper in the state. But again, Mark Schauer just didn't do well in the editorial interview with the people on that panel. It wasn't a unanimous decision.
Yeah.
But again, I have to say the thing about Snyder in Detroit.
You know, and the Free Press isn't alone on this either. You take a look at every daily newspaper.
Does Schauer have an endorsement anywhere?
Toledo Blade.
The Toledo and out of
the Lansing
state
City
newspaper.
Pulse endorsed them too, but that's a weekly.
Okay.
But you also look at, on the flip side, the Detroit News, the more conservative paper in the state, endorsed Gary Peters. They know that Terry Lynn Land was going to vote more in their line, but she just wasn't good. She just hasn't been prepared.
I need to be mindful of the significant number of our listeners who will be voting in the 8th district race for Congress. That's between Republican Mike Bishop and Democrat Eric Schertzing. Some are saying this race is more of a contest than expected. How are you all processing the 8th district contest?
Well, I think you got to give a natural edge to Mike Bishop, the Republican, just because of how the district is shaped and how the Republican base is. If you figure the Republicans have a 54% base, Oakland County, Livingston are lean Republican. The third county in the district, Ingham, leans Democrat. So just by the numbers, it would seem that he would have an advantage. Bishop has had the advantage in money, but this has been a strange race in the sense that both candidates didn't hop in this thing until late March when Mike Rogers decided he wasn't going to run. For congressional races, usually candidates prepare for at least a year ahead of time to get things going. This has been a silent race in comparison because of that, and I think it's been a disadvantage to maybe Schertzing in the sense that he hasn't been able to get out and network and get his votes up in the traditional means Democrats traditionally do, as opposed to just spending a ton of money, which would seem to help the Republicans.
I had a source in the Republican camp say this week that Mr. Bishop was counting on a strong showing by the governor and some coattails. So much for that. And the comment was, if we win this thing, we will, quote, win this on our own. I think Bishop wins this thing, but it might be closer than a lot of people think.
Kathy?
And a lot of issues have come up on this one. Mike Bishop, his record in the Senate, he Democrats remember that he was a big obstructionist and stopped a lot of things in their tracks when Jennifer Granholm was governor. So there's a memory there.
However, the issue of he was part of the shutdown of the government, everybody's made a big deal. I mean, let's be honest. It was a shutdown for how many hours? 6 hours?
Right. A combined
six hours. The sky did not fall. The state did not go into if you say, oh, he's part of the shutdown, people, oh, my gosh, that's awful.
And other parties were involved. I mean,
well, of course.
He played a key role.
Absolutely. But was he an obstructionist at times? Clearly he was, but was he to blame for the shutdown of 6 hours?
No.
He and the governor and Andy Dillon and everybody else in the legislature.
It made news when the Livingston Daily Press in Argus, which more often endorses Republicans, endorsed Eric Schertzing. It referred to him as a conservative Democrat. Would you say that's a fair description, or maybe an attempt to soften criticism from any conservative readers in Livingston County?
I don't know if it's that far off, really. I mean, as treasurer of Ingham County, it's not necessarily been a tax and spend administration
you,
for him.
You referred to Eric Schertzing as an economic conservative back in the summer.
Yeah, and you know, maybe he's more liberal on social issues, but let's take a look at what he's done as far as Ingham County treasurer. That land bank authority has been, I think, fairly successful and been something that he can highlight as a success within his tenure there. And he brings out a lot of Ingham County voters, too, I think. You know, he's spent a lot of time in Livingston and Oakland County where he's needed to. But if he didn't have support in Ingham County, he wouldn't be the nominee right now. I mean, he almost got beat in the primary because we had a lack of name ID problem. It's Ingham County that brought him over the finish line. He's going to need a strong, strong performance here for it to happen again.
Let me play devil's advocate for just a second, though. Here's Eric Schertzing Tuesday here on Current State.
I'm going to focus on infrastructure and education. You know, we're going to find the commonalities, the common ground, rather than what divides us. When did potholes in higher education become partisan?
Won't those priorities, infrastructure and education, raise concern among some number of voters who consider themselves economic conservatives, though, Kyle?
Except Congress doesn't deal with roads that much. I mean, they do to a certain degree. They don't deal with education that much. So I don't know if those are going to necessarily resonate. I mean, people think about that when they go to vote. But, you know, that's not Congress's role.
And talking about cooperating in Congress, I mean, really.
Yeah, I know. I think there's more national issues at play. I think if anybody's focused on issues, it's are you supportive of Obama or not? Do you like the direction of where he's going? Are you okay with the Affordable Care Act? Are you okay with what's going on with the Middle East and America's response there? I think those issues end up impacting voters a lot more than kind of these cookie-cutter issues that pop up in elections like roads and education.
Kyle Malin, Kathy Gray, and Tim Skubick, our guests here today on Current State's Month in Review. Tim, you've written about the lack of voter engagement this time around. Are you saying that you've seen more disengagement this time around than in past midterms?
Nah, it's been prevalent for quite a while. People have I go around to audiences and I ask them to write down the names of the candidates. Kind of a basic thing, okay? And they generally get the governor and Mr. Schauer, and there's a little drop off in the U.S. Senate. Then when you get to Secretary of State and Attorney General, I've gotten answers like Frank Kelly running for Attorney General. I think that's a little out of date. I'm not sure. Okay. I actually had somebody write down Dick Austin for Secretary of State, with all due respect. This is honest to God's truth. Okay, and Mr. Austin had left us about 8 years ago. And so people just aren't engaged as much in politics. If I ask them who the top pitcher is on the Tigers, they know it's Max. Yeah. I tell them he's not running for anything, though.
Your take on how the dust might settle on the state legislature here? Still Republican majorities?
I think so. Even if turnout is really big and it's a good night for Democrats, the way the districts are drawn, it doesn't favor the Democrats getting a majority. They're certainly not going to get a majority in the Senate. You know, it might be closer in the House.
Okay. Yeah, and I think in the House, I'm going to agree on the Senate. There's no way the Dems are going to take that. But in the State House, there is an opportunity. The problem is that they're starting off with a little bit of a hole, a couple open seats that the Democrats currently have are not going to go their way. So the deficit is actually a lot larger for the Ds than it is right now on paper.
Tim. Bottom line is the next Michigan House of Representatives will be more conservative than the one we have today.
Hmm.
And that's a problem for whomever is elected governor.
Yeah. Okay. I'm not going to disagree with that at all.
Okay. Interesting note to end on. Current State's Month in Review. We want to thank our contributors, three of Michigan's top Capitol reporters, Tim Skubit, Kathy Gray, and Kyle Mullen. Many thanks to all of you.
Thanks, Mark.
Thanks, Mark.